Welcome to the About Nashville podcast with Mike Rogers and Dan Whitehurst. This is episode number 55, y'all.
55,
man. And on this episode, we got Christy Martin, the coal miner's daughter. And this is going to be a fun one. It was a fun one. I'm acting like we haven't already had the interview. We've actually already had the interview. We know that it was a great interview. But, man, what have you been up to this week?
I worked in Huntsville at Stand Up Live, and I bought a motorcycle.
What would you buy a motorcycle for? What would be the reasoning behind buying a motorcycle?
I don't know. I already have a motorcycle. I shouldn't have bought it, but it was an impulse buy.
But are you going to like really ride it on the highway and stuff?
This is a smaller one. It's a 500 Royal Enfield. It's not really a highway bike. It's a back road bike.
Back road? What does that mean?
Just slower speeds. You know, you don't want to get out on the interstate with it. Well, somebody said, if you're going to ride on the interstate, stay in the right lane and wear bright colors.
Oh, so you'll be a bigger target?
So, yeah, so they can see you when they're coming up on you pretty fast.
So that way you're more colorful when you, like, splat all over the place. Is that what it is?
You want to look good when
your pieces going over left and right, they want to be able to see them things. They just don't want it to just, like, they want to be able to. I'm saying this horribly. There's people that have died in motorcycle accidents, and they're going, that's not funny, Mike. And I would agree, that's not funny. Being politically incorrect, but, you know, it is what it is. Couple things. I was in Philadelphia for the Mid-South Golden Gloves, for the National Golden Gloves. Well, it was the 100-year anniversary. Now, it wasn't the 100-year anniversary of the National Golden Gloves Tournament of Champions. Let me correct some misinformation that was out there. What happened was, in 1923, there was a editor for the Chicago, whatever the Chicago newspaper was, Tribune, I don't know. And he decided to come up with a boxing tournament in 1923 in Chicago, and he called it the Golden Gloves. Now, at that time, amateur boxing was illegal, and he just wanted to kind of see if he could get away with it, okay? And that's what he did, and he called it the Golden Gloves. Well, around 1924, 25, something like that, the New York Daily Times decided they wanted to do their own, you know, version of that, the Golden Gloves tournament. So they created the New York Golden Gloves. And the New York Daily Times, they had their own little, you know, tournament. And then in 1928, the two editors got together and they decided, hey, let's take our champions from our tournament and box your champions from your tournament. And they did that for several years. And then somewhere along the line, a few years later, the 1928 was what created the Tournament of Champions, the National Golden Gloves Tournament of Champions. And then in 1934, or right before that, they started creating franchises. Mine was the Mid-South Golden Gloves. It was actually created in 1934 in Memphis, Tennessee. And at that time, all the franchises were normally created by, you know, your local newspapers who supported those. Even Nashville had its own franchise there for a while that was by the, what is the newspaper here?
Tennessean.
The Tennessean.
And they used to have the Banner.
Okay. Well, the Tennessean was who supported the Nashville Golden Gloves. Here back, you know, in the 50s and 60s and early 60s anyway. And that's where Donnie Broadway, I don't know if you know Donnie Broadway.
Oh, I know Donnie well.
Do you really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's right, because he was a cop.
Yeah.
So Donnie Broadway was a National Golden Gloves champion. Did you know that?
What I heard was he was one fight away from it, but he lost a disputed decision and never fought again.
That would be incorrect. He actually won the National Golden Gloves. I can show you the records to show it, to prove it. He won the National Golden Gloves, was the National Golden Gloves champion. That year, I think it was 1961 or 2, maybe. And he won it like at 106 pounds. He was a little bitty dude.
Oh, yeah.
Now, I don't think he ever turned pro. And if he did, I don't think he ever, you know, he didn't. That was about the, you know, the highest pinnacle that he went. But I forgot. Yeah, he was a police officer. As a matter of fact, I think he was undercover like yourself at one point.
Yeah, and he ran the Police Athletic League gym.
Yes, but unfortunately, yeah, as you know, that didn't go well.
Right.
But that wasn't his fault.
No.
That was, I hope that person rots away in hell forever. That person's still in prison, right?
As far as I know, I don't know.
Yeah, yeah. That was about 1997 when that whole thing went. 97 or 98 when that, or maybe 99. Anyway, between 97 and 99, that's when that really hit. And that was a bad, bad deal. But yeah, I'm cognizant of that.
Yeah, I used to go out to that gym and hang out there and talk to him some. And
Donnie or the guy we're referencing?
No, Donnie. I wasn't even sure which one was the guy that did the thing, but.
It was not Donnie.
I knew it wasn't Donnie. But I'd hang out and talk to him and, you know, watch him spar and stuff. And actually got in the ring, sparred with a couple guys, you know.
Really?
Just playing around.
How'd you do?
Oh, they let me. They went real easy on me. but Donnie said at one time he was going to put my name in to take over the boxing program when he retired.
Really?
Yeah.
Too bad he didn't do that sooner than later.
Yeah.
It would probably still be in existence. Huh. I don't know. Maybe. Anyway. So it's like, you know, boxing has been very, very good to me.
I don't want to get hit in the head.
Yes. Yeah. I had a fantastic defense in boxing. It had a unique name. It was called None. I would get offended if they missed me. You know, it is what it is. Have you heard the term? And when I say this, you're going to be like, what? There is a new trend going around now called, and I had to look this up because I didn't believe it for a second. It's called Passbook Bros. No, I'm going to make sure I'm saying that right. Is that right? Passport Bros.
Passport Bros.
Passport Bros.
Never heard of it.
So, I said Passbook Bros. It's called Passport Bros. Apparently, it is American men that are fed up with Western women and their attitudes and the way they act and the things that they do. And they're taking their passports and they're going to the Dominican Republic. They're going to Colombia. They're going to Thailand. They're going to China. They're going all over the place and finding wives and bringing them back because they're sick of Western women. And Western women are all up in arms because they're like, why are the men leaving? Why are they leaving the country to go get them? They're bringing these women back because they're submissive and they do what they're told and they cook and clean and
those are negatives.
You know what? I'm not going to get into the political dynamic of all of that, but apparently it's a legitimate thing. And I just, you know, have you heard anything about it?
No, I haven't.
Maybe we need to get you a passport. I mean, as a single man, as a single comic, you know, you're getting up there in the years, you know.
Maybe a little.
You're getting up there in the years. Maybe we need to send you to Thailand and bring you back with a wife. What do you think? Think we can do this? We can make it a whole episode?
Can we go to Sweden?
Well, you know what? I think you'd probably, I bet the Swedish women are probably more westernized than the Asian women.
Probably are.
Or even I'm going to sound like a dork here, but Asian Hispanic women are probably your best bet. But European women probably would not be as, would fall probably into the definition of what they're looking for.
Well, I like them all.
You like them all, huh?
I like them all.
So if you could just go pick from any country, well, you know what? I bet you Ukrainian women might be real good to get a hold of right now.
Yeah, I'm sure they're trying to get out of there.
Ukraine and Russia, and I bet we could get you a hot Ukrainian woman. Call her that Stella would be German, wouldn't it? Boris. No, that's a guy's name. Wait a minute. he identifies as a beautiful. so what Are you up for it? Are you up for it? I will send you to Thailand tomorrow. You got to bring back a wife, though.
Well,
and it's got to be a good episode.
I'm going to get a motorcycle tomorrow, but maybe Thursday.
Okay. All right. Well, dadgummit. Wait a minute. I thought you said you just got a motorcycle.
I put the down payment down to hold it.
Did you get a big helmet?
I've got a big helmet.
Okay. How big a motorcycle is this, by the way?
500 cc's.
What?
It's a small bike. It was actually what the British Army used, the military used in World War II. It's a very old design.
A 500 is a small bike?
Yeah.
That sounds big to me, because like when I was a kid, I had 125.
Right, yeah. Well, these are my Harley's a 1340, so it's...
What?
Yeah, it's over twice as big motor-wise.
What does it weigh? I mean, if that damn thing ever laid down on you, how would you...
It's not a dresser. It's more of a kind of a chopper looking bike.
How much does it weigh?
I think about 700 maybe.
So 700 pounds falling on top of you is going to be very hard to get up off of. Yeah.
Yeah, it probably would.
Yeah. I mean, do you fear rolling it? Like having it roll over on you?
No.
You make those curves, do you like get way on down like they do in those?
Nah, not on my bike. I got ape hangers and... You know, it's raked out a little bit.
You just spoke, like, literally, I heard my name, and then I heard blah, 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 blah.
It has very tall handlebars.
Okay, so it has tall handlebars. What did you say? It's got gapers and rakers?
Ape hangers is
I have no idea what that means. That's
tall handlebars.
Okay, so, you know, in my neck of the woods, it means you got... That could be a very bad thing. We got eight hangers back here. Okay, that is a monstrosity. That looks like something, get your motor running.
Yeah.
That is exactly what that looks like. What in the world would possess you to... You want to ride that on the highway?
And I have ridden it to Las Vegas.
What?
I've ridden it to... I've been to 27 states on one trip. Went up through North Dakota, South Dakota.
And you never left town. Oh, my gosh. 27 states in one trip. How long did that take? A week?
About 3 weeks.
3 weeks. And how many women did you meet in that 3 weeks in that 27 states? Because I'm sure you're going from one bike rally to the next.
No, we were riding and camping out on side of the road in tents.
Oh, my God. You really were easy riding it.
Yeah.
I've never seen Easy Rider, but I'm pretty sure that that's what the movie is based on, isn't it? They're riding, just going from one state to the next and sleeping on...
They're going to Mardi Gras. They had sold a bunch of cocaine to the guy, Wallace Sound guy, is the guy that played the part. The one that killed that lady.
Hopper? Dennis Hopper?
No.
Henry Fonda?
No. He died in prison. There's a couple of documentaries about him. He was very famous. He worked with the Beatles. He was a musician guy. And he invented what they called the wall of sound. And then he murdered somebody about 10 years ago.
Oh, the producer?
The music producer. He plays the guy that... They sold the cocaine
with the crazy hairdo.
Yeah.
What was his name?
I'll tell you in a second.
Okay, you better tell us quick because I'm not editing this thing.
Wall of Sound.
Somebody's going. It's this guy, you dorks.
Right, Phil Spector.
Phil Spector. What a Al Pacino played him in the movie.
Yeah, but he played the guy that bought the dope in Easy Rider, and they got a lot of money, and they're just going to go to Las Mardi Gras.
Mm-hmm.
That's the trip, is riding from wherever they live to Mardi Gras.
They're redoing the sound here in this theater Wednesday, I think. And that's going to be one of the first movies. The first two I'm going to watch in here are going to be Easy Rider and Apocalypse. Apocalypse Now?
Okay, yeah, two. That's a good one.
Yeah, so those are the first two I'm going to watch in the theater.
Easy Rider's it's really kind of like an old MTV video. It's got a lot of music. It playing while the scenes, and there's a lot of good scenery. The plot is, you know, so-so.
Mm.
But the scenery, it's a good movie. It's okay, you know, to relax and
get Did it back. Win any awards or anything? Jack Nicholson was in it, wasn't he?
Yeah, Jack Nicholson was in it. Dennis
Henry Hopper. Henry Fonda was in it.
Peter Fonda was in it. And yeah, it was a very cheaply made movie, and it did very well for what it was. And the poster, like, you know, that poster probably sold almost as many as Farrah Fawcett's poster.
Really? What was the...
It's just both bikes going down the road in the desert.
Okay.
It's just a really, really cool picture.
Did you own it?
Hmm?
Did you own that poster?
I own it now.
And it's on... Oh, is it in your garage?
It is, on the wall.
Yeah, so it's Farrah Fawcett on your wall.
No.
So why would you have that and not Farrah Fawcett, huh?
I don't know.
Okay, well, I got Farrah Fawcett. You have Peter Fonda and Peter Fonder. That is just as goofy as it gets. All right, man. Let's get to this interview with Christy Martin. We're here with Christy Martin at the... tell us about this event and how it got started and what the plans are for it moving forward.
This is a great event. Jimmy Adams is the mastermind behind it all, of adding boxing, country music, a little bit of comedian I think we're having tonight. It's, you know, a little flavor for everybody. But what it does, we know people already love the music.
Right.
So we're going to get new boxing fans, I think. You know, we're going to bring people into the fight, to the fights. They're coming for the music, but hey, they're going to see some local talent and decide, hey, this boxing's pretty damn good, so I want to come back.
Have you ever been to Nashville before?
I have. I was actually scheduled to fight in Nashville on a Don King card way, way back in the day.
So that would have been like 97, 98?
Yeah, it was a while back.
Okay, okay. Yeah, I think I was at that.
I was at that fight, yeah.
Yeah, well, there was a couple of them. One of them was with Nick Rupa fighting Terry Norris for the light middleweight championship. I believe that one was in 97. And then in 98, I looked it up. It was I'm going to butcher this name, but I think it was Jaffa Balagu versus Frank Lyles. I believe that's right. Is that right?
That was really good.
I don't even know.
I think you're right on. And I think that was the card I was supposed to be on, but there were some problems between DK and you know, my ex-husband, so I was not on the card anymore.
Well, I don't even know how to you brought it up, so I'll say I saw the documentary, and it was amazing. First of all, number one, it was amazing. Number two, wow. You're not only as tough in the ring, but you're as tough in life, and that is absolutely amazing. Kudos to you. I know you're like, you're not, this isn't really a question. You're like, you're not saying anything that I can respond to, but I'm just saying I admire your journey, and it was amazing. How did the Netflix thing even come about?
Well, it was the craziest thing, because at the time I was living in Charlotte, North Carolina, and I get a phone call from the Way Brothers at from Netflix. They do all these documentaries, and you know, Chrissy would like to do a documentary. We're Netflix. We do this. And I'm like, sure. You know, sure. Okay. Yeah, I'm in. Never really believing that it was going to happen or that they were even for real. But it did. And it was a great group of people that did the documentary. Lara Bronson was the producer, director. So, yeah, I've become friends with her. And she just, I think they treated me really fairly.
Yeah, absolutely. You know. The first time I met you, I said, was in 2008. It was in North Little Rock, Arkansas at the National Golden Gloves. And if I'm not mistaken, I think he was there.
He was.
Okay. And as I'm putting up, so I didn't even know about the documentary. My buddy here, who is an absolute huge fan of yours and a huge fan of boxing, he was like, Mike, you've got to watch this documentary, man. It is amazing. It's about Christy Martin. I turn it on, and I'm watching. I'm like, I've met this guy. What an asshole. I'm sorry. Yeah. I shouldn't say that. Terrible. I'm already cussing on this
please
thing.
Please don't think that I'm going to defend him.
he's like going, don't cuss. But, okay, I'll bleep that part out. But still, what a not a good guy. But is that how you got into boxing, ultimately?
Not really. While I was in college back in Southern West Virginia, for some reason, I'm very competitive. And this tough man thing would come around every year. And I just, for some reason, thought it would be a great idea if I would do this Tough Man. At the time, they didn't even allow women to be in the Tough Man contest, of course, fighting other women. But one year, finally, they decided to have women.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, I'm like the first one to sign up. I just loved it. I mean, I struggled hard. You know, the first fight was tough. And then, like, later on, the third fight I had that weekend, I knocked this girl out. And, I mean, I knocked her out with one punch, and I was just, like, hooked. This is the biggest adrenaline rush you could ever have in life. And, yeah, that was the start of it.
What year was that?
Oh, my. A long time ago. Like, 1987.
Oh, you know, that's how Tommy Morrison got his start, was boxing. And my dad was his cut man, so I knew Tommy. And seeing how, you know, how he went from the Tough Man contest to boxing in the amateurs for a little bit, and then he worked with John Brown and then turned pro, went on to become... Speaking of which, I got ADHD, forgive me. Was his story mentioned at all in that new George Foreman movie?
I haven't seen the Foreman movie yet.
Oh, okay. Well, never mind. Sorry, I got sidetracked. But anyway, he started in the Tough Man contest thing, too. So how many times did you enter it?
I entered the Tough Man three times, but I also went to the World Tough Man.
What?
Are you kidding me? Back in 1987.
What?
The World Tough Man. And get this, it was in a very small town in West Virginia.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Wasn't that where it started? Was it West Virginia?
No. Art Dorr started in Detroit.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I didn't know that.
Or in the Detroit area, somewhere up in Michigan. I don't remember. Maybe it's not Detroit, but it was definitely in Michigan.
Do you remember his movie back in 82 or 83 with Dennis Quaid called Tough Enough?
I don't.
Do you remember it?
Yeah, I do. That's your life.
It is. It's my life. It is totally my life. But anyway, this isn't about me. When did you know? You won it three times, or did you just?
I lost in the World Tough Woman.
Okay.
And but I won the others.
Okay. So when did you go, I'm really good at this?
I never believed I was good at it. I never believed it was going to be a real thing until I signed with Don King.
Really?
And when I signed, I had already had like 20 fights by the time I signed with DK. And but coming back from South Florida, mm-hmm. signing with him, it was like, oh, shit. I mean, now you're in the big leagues. It doesn't matter where you are. You know, you can be the last man on the roster, mm-hmm. but now you're in the big leagues.
Right.
What are you going to do? I mean, it was a scary, scary thought. This is Don King.
Right.
I mean, and in the 90s, are you kidding me? You couldn't. There's not a better promoter, I don't think, ever. But in the 90s, you couldn't get any bigger than Don King.
Yeah, so, even in the 70s and 80s.
Right. Right. And so, I mean, it was so, oh, my gosh, it was scary. But that fueled me. Like, every time I went into the ring, I thought, I'm taking DK on my shoulder. I can't let people think he screwed up.
Right.
I want everybody to think, oh, my right. God, he was a genius. Where did he find this girl? So that's, you know, I took that energy every time I fought.
Who gave you your nickname?
Jimmy Lennon Jr.
Really?
They were trying so hard to give me a nickname like the Smasher, the, you know, the Destroyer, all these things. And I would tell them, I'm like, I don't want any name like that because you're called the Destroyer, you lose, now you're destroyed. You know, there's always some way they can turn it around. He said, what about the coal miner's daughter? And I'm like, well, we have to ask Loretta Lynn.
And you did?
And so we got word to Loretta Lynn. It was, you know, she gave us a blessing, and I actually got to talk to her a couple times. I met her a couple times. And I was inducted into the Hall of Fame in 2020. We didn't get to have the ceremony until 2022, and she actually sent me a video congratulating me for being inducted into the Hall of Fame, and it was one of the last things that she did like that. So
why didn't they put that in the documentary?
Because it happened after. I mean, it just happened. I mean, we just had that the documentary is a couple years old.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
okay.
We just had the ceremony.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you so much. I cannot wait. Let's say the name of the event that we're in, because I keep saying Country Box Country. It is
Country Box.
Country Box.
Voted by Jimmy Adams, and we're going to take this thing and we're going to ride it to the top.
Come on. Everybody
needs to jump on board with us now, because this is going to be so big. It is already big, but it's just going to keep getting bigger.
Thank you, Coal Miner's Daughter. Thank you, Christy Martin. Huge fan. You are awesome.
Thank you so much.
All right.